Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
By someone here about whether I had seen the New York Times article with regards to a PAC that was presumably being formed to attack President Obama, and if I had a reaction to it, I want to make it very clear. I repudiate that effort. I think it's the wrong course for a PAC or a campaign. I hope that our campaigns can respectively...
Goodbye, gone. He's over. Romney's finished. He's a fall guy. I'm the only one in the media who told you. You mark my words. Sean Hannity is the official water boy of the Republican Party. That you know. Why else would Romney only go on his show? Won't go on my show. Won't go on Rush's show. Won't go on any true conservative show. But Romney's happy to go before the water boy, Hannity, which is an embarrassment, by the way. But let's put Hannity aside. He always was a puppet. Let's talk about Romney. I'm the only one in the media who told you that Romney was being misdirected by the very same people who misdirected McCain, who should have won the last election. McCain also refused to talk about Obama as a Muslim, also refused to talk about Obama's character, also refused to bring up any of the difficulties with regard to Reverend Wright's anti-American, anti-white commentary. Again, McCain said, no, I won't go there, I won't do it, and he lost the election. Why? Of course the Republicans voted for McCain. But the independents, who everybody knows controls the election, did not come out for him because he was nothing but a two-faced rhino. Now we have Romney, McCain too. He comes out and he says the exact same thing. He's going to repudiate the PAC, the super PAC, that wants to run the Wright tapes and tie Reverend Wright's hateful commentaries to Obama. So I can only conclude that either Romney doesn't even understand what he's doing, or Romney is a straight-out fall guy for the Republican establishment, offered a huge payout at the end of the term in the form of contracts, books, lecture tours, or whatever. The whole thing is fixed. It's the 1919 World Series, and if Arnold Rothstein can fix the World Series, believe me, it's nothing to fix a U.S. election. That's my opinion. Your take-home message is this. Savage was the only media figure to tell you that Romney was being run by the McCain team. Was I right or wrong? Now, topic number two is a bigger story in a way. We thought it was all going to be about Reverend Wright, Reverend Wrong, Reverend this, Reverend that, Romney being a fall guy. Comes out today that a literary booklet, a promotional booklet put out in 1991 by Obama's then literary agent, said that Barack Obama was born in Kenya. That's right. Now, it hit the sites today. It's all over the sites. Exclusive. Obama's literary agent in 1991 booklet said that he was born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. This came out on Breitbart.com. And it says Andrew was never a birther, and Breitbart News is a site that has never advocated the narrative of birthism, blah, blah, blah. Nevertheless, the literary publication, the promotional brochure by the agent in 1991, before Obama was a senator, before he was known by anybody, his agent clearly said, and here it is, printed in blue, Barack Obama, the first African-American president of the Harvard Law Review. Of course, we don't know how he got that position either. Did they just give it to him because he was the first African-American that they needed to give it to, or did he earn it? Was he particularly brilliant? Did he write some legal analysis that would have led Harvard Law Review I would think the same fools who gave the Harvard Law Review to Barack Obama based upon his race also gave the Harvard Law Review to Miss Kagan, another brilliant scholar, another genius that's on the Supreme Court, obviously because of her brilliance, her legal brilliance. So now it turns out the booklet was distributed to business colleagues in 1991. I didn't write it. His agent wrote it. So if you're a diehard liberal and you're listening to the show and you hear today that a literary agent in 1991 printed a brochure about his clients and he boasted that, quote, Barack Obama is the first African-American president of the Harvard Law Review, was born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. Does this give you pause? Are you now questioning whether or not he's an American citizen? Are you now questioning whether or not he is a natural born American qualified to be a president? Does this bother you at all, or do you not even care? Should we just throw out that constitutional requirement that an individual be a natural born citizen to be a president? Should we throw that away? Because that's where the left is going to go now.
Hey, who cares? What do I care? He's a great guy. Therefore, whatever he did is fine. I don't care if he works for the communists themselves. You know what I mean? He can work for the communist government of Russia, China. I don't care. He's a great guy. And that's all that matters. Screw those right-wing Republicans. That's what you're going to hear from them.
Okay, so that's the story. What do you think about it? What do you think about the fact that his literary agency, confirming that the president of the United States in 1991, they said was born in Kenya? Does it matter to you? Are you now questioning whether Obama was born in America? Are you impressed with the fact that I, Michael Savage, was the only media figure to tell you Romney was being run by the McCain team and being run off the rails and that the Republicans want to lose the election? Are you shocked to have confirmation today that Romney is a fall guy who will not win, which is why Obama twice slipped, once with Medvedev when he said, when I'm reelected, remember that? Why was he so cocksure he'd be reelected? Because he's been told he's going to be reelected. Because Romney is not only the Manchurian candidate, what you're about to hear you'll never forget. Romney is the Manchurian uncandidate. Romney is the Manchurian non-candidate. Sometimes I think Romney was simply brainwashed, not with the Queen of Diamonds, but with the Ace of Clubs. And let me tell you something else. I have no reason to doubt my suspicions about Romney. None whatsoever. The man was brainwashed like in the Manchurian non-candidate. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Having a campaign focused on character assassination is one of the things I find offensive, among many others. In the
end of story. Goodbye. This is a day after the Obama slime machine called Romney a vampire. A day after the Obama slimers called Romney a vampire, which they got directly from Fatso Newt Gingrich. The Obama campaign is making great hay right now with everything that Fatso threw at Romney, everything that Fatso dug up on Romney, everything Fatso tried to puncture Romney with is now being used by the Obama campaign. Newt Gingrich should be run out of America for what he did. But nevertheless, you'd expect that a man who's attacked with such slime, being called a vampire by the Obama slimers, would fight back by talking about Reverend Wright, by talking now about the booklet which states he was born in Kenya. But no, he says, no, I'm too good for that. Once again, we have another white glove. We have another white glove, middle of the road Republican who is going to lose. And the reason he will lose is because he will not attract the independent. Now, is this definitively guaranteed? I hope not. I'm really trying to wake up one of the Romney boys, if they're not also one of the Manchurian nun candidates themselves, or maybe they were also put into a cauldron and brainwashed. If they don't tell daddy to get out from behind the advisors who have run him off the rails, he's going to lose. So Romney Jr., all the Romney Juniors and all of the other Romney children, all of you, Ann Romney, one of you is listening. I know that. Your father, your husband, is being misled by the very same people who took McCain's advantages, and he was way ahead in the polls, and destroyed McCain by telling McCain to play the same game your husband Romney, your father Romney, is playing right now. I hope you hear me. And I'm not Sean Hannity. This is Michael Savage, and I approve of my monologue. New York, Daniel, W-O-R, go ahead. You agree or disagree with me?
Michael, I'm nauseated by what I just heard. Does anybody have any backbone anymore? I mean, Romney, how does he repute something? Let the facts be the facts. We need a president that's going to stand up and stop listening to the advisors. I'm sick of it.
Well, but am I right when I told you for almost a year now that Romney was being misled by McCain's advisors? It turns out today that McCain came out next to Romney and said, don't say anything about Reverend Wright. And McCain's advisor said, don't say anything about Reverend Wright. Why are they so defensive about Reverend Wright and Obama? What are they hiding here?
You were more than right. You hit the nail on the head. We knew somebody with backbone. Romney needs to be wrong.
All right, you're breaking up. I'm sorry. I know how angry people are right now. How do you feel about the topic that Obama's literary agent in 1991 published a booklet saying that their star, well, one of their authors, was born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii? Barack Obama, the first African-American president of the Harvard Law Review, was born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. Does this now give you pause? Have you now become a birther? Do you agree with me that Romney is the Manchurian nun candidate? Are you now questioning whether Obama was born in America? Are you impressed enough to have learned that Savage was the only media figure to tell you Romney was being run by the McCain machine, which came out today to be true, to now finally go out and look into my book, Trickle Down Tyranny, before it is too late? Let's begin with the next caller. The next caller is a supporter of Romney. Carolyn in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
I still feel Mitt Romney's going to win. This pamphlet, although I agree with you, he should be tougher. Let the pundits do this, and Romney will raise above this. Sean Hannity spent an hour on this pamphlet from Breitbart thing, 1991. It's on Breitbart. The pundits will do all this. I still feel Mitt Romney...
Well, wait a minute, but we're not running for office. What do you mean the pundits will do all this? We're not running for anything. Romney's the one who's supposed to be the president. Why is he refusing to talk about Reverend Wright?
Yeah, he should, but he won't, and I still think the economy...
But ma'am, listen to me. You're a diehard Republican. God bless you. You'll vote for him no matter what. God bless you. We are talking about the large swath of independents, non-committed voters, who will not vote for a man who does not come out vociferously enough and express the realities of the times. And Romney cannot play it so close to the middle. Look, didn't McCain do the very same thing and lose? On with the win. See? Robocaller. Robocallers. Now Romney has robocallers. Susan from New York, you're next up. Harriet from Brooklyn. Sandra from Los Angeles. They're all robocallers. They're calling me out of the Romney headquarters. They sound just like the girl next door, the woman next door. The cougar next door. They're having the cougar next door voice. And they're all robocallers saying, ah, Romney's a good guy. Ah, Bashaw. He doesn't need to do it. Let the pundits. Incidentally, there's no such thing as a pundit. I don't understand where this illiteracy has popped up from. There's not a pundit. Even Hannity uses the word pundit because he never went to college. God bless him. There are intelligent people who never went to college. He's not one of them. But the word is pundit, not pundit. He has to check the Merriam-Webster every once in a while, Sean. You may find it behind some drywall. Look for the Merriam-Webster, something you missed in your upbringing. Pundit, not pundit. New York, WOR. Marcus, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I don't understand why Mitt Romney says he's not going to reduce himself by committing character assassination, and yet he spent tens of millions of dollars trashing the Republicans during the early nomination. So how can he explain that hypocrisy?
You explain it to me. You explain it to me. How about Mitt Romney rejecting the super PAC that wants to run the Reverend Wright commentary and tie it to Obama? That's a natural. That's exactly what needs to be done to wake up the people to who we really have in the presidency. So why would Romney be against it unless there's only two conclusions? One, because he doesn't even understand what he's saying, which would indicate he's not qualified to be president. Or two, because he's a fall guy and he's a Manchurian nun candidate. In either case, it's not good for him right now.
I didn't believe it before, but I'm definitely starting to believe that. Being a fall guy.
How do you feel about me having told you on this show, on this station, same station for over a year, that Romney was being run off the rails by the McCain team? You've heard me say that, haven't you, over the last months?
I've heard you say it since he started being the front runner in the race.
Right, and now today the McCain advisors come out and say, yes, we told John McCain not to do it. We're telling Romney not to do it. And they all make basically the same statement. Doesn't that tell you the Republican establishment is in for the fix?
It's definitely possible.
Well, you'll get a free copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. Maybe I'll change one person's mind in the country. Maybe it's not too late yet. The one person whose mind I need to change is Romney. Romney needs to come out from behind the fall. You know, sometimes a fighter in the old days, maybe even today, will take a dive for a great deal of money. And then his pride gets the best of him. And he says, you know what? I can't take a fall. I can't do it. I have to live with myself. Romney's a devout Christian. Maybe his conscience will get to him. And he'll say, I can't take this fall, Ann. I'm not going to take the fall. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to run. I'm going to talk about Reverend Wright. I'm going to talk about the birth certificate issue, even to question it because of what just came out today, the literary agent. And I'm going to do it. I got to do what I got to do, Ann. I got to live with myself. I am sure that there are fighters who've said no to taking a fall and then gone out and won. And God knows if they paid for it after the fight. I don't really know. Who knows? You see movies. But there's so much at stake right now. But it leads you to question whether it would make a difference now. We know how bad things are under Obama. We know that he's decimated the social order of this country for the worse. We know he's only just got started. And we know that if he gets a second term, it'll get even worse. So you say, well, what good is it if Romney wins if he's going to do the same thing? I'll tell you what the difference is, actually, now that I'm forced to think about it on my feet. Romney's, the people around Romney, the people who are supporting Romney, many of them are conservatives, real ones, Family Research Council and others. They're never going to let this guy veer in the same direction that Obama has gone in. Never. While the people around Obama are the worst of the worst of the worst, international anti-American socialists from top to bottom. You start with that slime bag George Soros, the worst man on the planet, the most evil man that ever existed, who has not actually decimated populations with war, but has decimated social orders with money. George Soros advises him, supports him. Now we read today that Warren Buffett, the biggest phony in the history of American business, is going to buy 63 newspapers after saying in 2009 he'd never buy a newspaper. Why is Buffett doing that? Think about it. Why is Buffett doing it? Insider tips.
Savage.
I was asked by someone here about whether I had seen the New York Times article with regards to a PAC that was presumably being formed to attack President Obama, and if I had a reaction to it, I want to make it very clear. I repudiate that effort. I think it's the wrong course for a PAC or a campaign. I hope that our campaigns can respectively be about the future and about issues and about a vision.
Finished. Goodbye. Goodbye, Mitt. Nice to have met you. I'm sure you enjoyed the veal parmesan that night. But you're finished. You're toast. You're toast. Go back to wherever you came from because no one will remember you. If you keep this up, you're finished. I have no respect for a man who takes a fall like this. If he is going to deceive us like this, to pretend he's running for office when he's not. Now, I have something to prove my point, and that is Senator John McCain, who also took a fall, a dive in the last election. He had the election in his hand. We were coming into the end of the campaign. I tried my best to help him. I said, use the phrase trickle up poverty in your last campaign. Smile at Obama and say, Senator Obama, we've heard all of this before, and it's called trickle up poverty. He could have slammed Obama to the mat and won. Didn't listen to me. Then a woman in the audience at one of the then town hall meetings said to, it was McCain. She said, Senator McCain, aren't you going to talk about Obama being a Muslim and Reverend Wright? And McCain said no. He said he's a nice man. We don't have that one, but we have this one. Listen to clip 10.
I think that when people support you, it doesn't mean that you support everything they say. Obviously, those words and those statements are statements that none of us would associate ourselves with. And I don't believe that Senator Obama would support any of those.
He sat in the church for 20 years, but he. So McCain says that although Obama sat at the Reverend's feet, absorbing every word for 20 years, anti-American, anti-Semitism. One word after another, 20 straight years. It wasn't one speech. This is a man who baptized Obama's children. This is a man who married Michelle and Barack Obama. You're telling me that Senator Obama repudiates what Reverend Wright said? Reverend Wright himself doesn't agree with that. Reverend Wright himself said that Obama said to him that your problem is you have to tell the truth. And the good Reverend Wright, shall I call him the good Reverend Wright, the man who hates this country and hates people, white people? Should we take pleasure in the fact that he said to Reverend Wright, your problem, Reverend, is that you have to tell the truth? And Reverend Wright says there's nothing wrong with that. Yet, here we have McCain saying, oh, Reverend Wright's statements are not what Obama agrees with. Now we have McCain, too. We have McCain, too, in the form of Mitt Romney saying the same thing in different words. It's over. If Romney's boys do not shake their father out of his stupor and say, Dad, you can't take this fall for the honor of the family. Think of your father. Think of your father, the governor of Michigan. Think of the man he was. Are you as good a man as your father? Would your father have done this, Mitt Romney? Would Matt Romney have done what Mitt Romney is doing today? Would he have taken such an obsequious pathway in order to lose? Because he will lose. You got to understand what I'm saying to you. Many of this, see, this is a little too subtle for most Republican loyalists. They don't understand what I'm saying. They say, why are you bashing him? You're only helping Obama. Don't run him down. No, I'm not running him down. My job is to be a commentator the best way I know how. My job is to see things, analyze them, and give you one man's opinion. I have no effect. I'm banned in the United Kingdom. I'm banned from the White House. I'm banned from San Francisco. There are many places that won't have me because I'm so outspoken and so out of, let's say, the current of the mainstream. And that includes the Republicans. They don't like me at all. They detest me. In fact, the Republicans detest me more than the Democrats do. You know why? Well, you can pretty much figure out why. Nevertheless, it's almost doesn't matter what anyone thinks of me. Why do you listen to the show? You're listening for one man's opinion. And I'm usually right. And that's you say, well, look, I mean, I'd agree with him, but he's usually right. I'm right again. I've told you for a year, it seems to me, that McCain's advisors are advising Romney and they're misadvising him. Comes out today, I was right. Now it comes out, the biggest story is even bigger than this, than Reverend Wright. Obama's literary agent in 1991 published a booklet showing his clients. And the client that you see in blue, it says, born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. Barack Obama, the first African-American president of the Harvard Law Review, was born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. So that's what they published then. Are they going to rewrite the booklet now? Are they going to rewrite the booklet now? Says the son of an American anthropologist. Really? What did she do? By the way, the father. He attended Columbia and worked as a financial journalist? An editor for Business International Corporation? Does anyone know any articles published by Barack Obama as a financial journalist? I can't imagine he wrote anything on it. He served as project coordinator in Harlem for the New York Public Interest Research Group. Blah, blah, blah. His commitment to social and racial issues will be evident in his first book. Blah, blah, blah. Well, he's entitled to do what he wants and say what he wants, but we're also entitled to ask, why would his literary agent have printed this if it was false? And does it matter to you? Does it matter that he was born in Kenya? Does anyone care about the law anymore? Yes or no? Why is Romney so obsequious? Why is Romney not talking about the real issues? Was Savage the only one in the media who said that Romney was being run by the McCain campaign? Do you now have a new respect for Michael Savage, or are you now more afraid of what I say than ever before? I mean, I have 100 questions I could ask you. Let us go to Pittsburgh. Michael, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hey, my big point is with the article about him coming out, his literary agent publishing that he was born in Kenya, I do care. I mean, we need to know the answer. If he was born in Kenya, then everything he has done so far, isn't it null and void? I mean, isn't that the quickest way to wipe out Obamacare and all these other ridiculous
laws? Well, the right thing to do with this question mark hanging over his head is to remove President Obama from the presidency. put Joseph Biden in as the president to serve out the rest of his term, nullify all the acts, legislation, and executive orders, and then hold our breath until November 6, 2012. That's what should be done. Do you think it will be done?
I don't think it will be done. I mean, you'd actually have to have the Senate to be able to do that. They're never going to stand up against Obama. He owns them.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think the media is ignoring the fact that his own literary agency published the fact that he was born in Kenya?
I don't think he's ignoring it so much as he doesn't care because he knows nobody's going to hold him accountable for it.
He has an old book blurb that lists him as Kenyan-born 20 years before there was ever a controversy on the subject. In other words, they used it to Barack Obama's advantage when it was cool to be African, right?
Absolutely.
In other words, let's analyze this. Why was his literary agent saying he was born in Kenya? Because he thought it had cachet and it would make people want to buy a book from him. Wow, he's African-American as far as he's born in Kenya. That's cool. You know, white males need not apply. We want everything ethnic. We want everything non-white, so we'll buy his book. That's why. You think I don't know it? I lived through those terrible years in the literary world. I remember what those fool publishers were doing. They rejected books by white males to publish books by idiots because the idiots look better on a book cover. Don't get me started about what went on in this country and how it's been destroyed over the last 30 years. This man willfully ran and served as president of the United States when he obviously willfully knew he was unqualified to legally run. To me, that's considered not a crime, not a misdemeanor, but a felony. This is a felonious offense if it's true, is it not? But you know this is not going to happen. You know what's coming. You know that the Republicans are now going to rally around Obama on this issue. How do I know it? I can prove it. Here is the dimwit, George Bush, calling the Arab Spring a promotion of freedom. Here is perhaps the stupidest man in the history of America to have ever sat in the Oval Office, glorifying in a speech at the George W. Bush Institute yesterday the Arab Spring, even though the Muslim Brotherhood has sprung up from the gutters from Cairo to Tripoli. Listen to this man glorifying the emergence of the radical Islamist in clip 11.
These are extraordinary times in the history of freedom. In the Arab Spring, we have seen the broadest challenge to authoritarian rule since the collapse of Soviet communism.
I never heard anything like this. I never heard anything like this. Muslim radicals have taken over Egypt. They're sacking the Cairo Museum. They're robbing treasures. They're sacking libraries. They're driving Coptic Christians out of Egypt. The Jews are being driven out of Egypt. And this dummy gets up and talks a speech that has no relationship to reality. What world does George Bush live in? Answer, the world that the Republicans write for him. George Bush is limited to a sheet of paper 8.5 by 11. Whatever they put in front of him, he reads. That's the reality. Is Mitt Romney any different than George Bush? No. Therefore, those who control this country and the world are going to write up some 8.5, 11 sheets for them, teleprompters, and they're going to say, Barack Obama was not born in Kenya. He's a natural-born citizen. But, sir, what about the literary... Ah, oh, Bashaw, that's nothing. Why, that was a mistake. That booklet that you saw with your own eyes showing, stating that he was born in Kenya, that was an error. We just found the literary agent himself who said it was a fraud put out by Andrew Breitbart. But, sir, Andrew Breitbart's been dead now several months. Well, no, Andrew Breitbart did that from the grave along with Richard Nixon. They got together in the next world, and Nixon and Breitbart got together, and they created a printing press in Hades. And in Hades, they printed this literary brochure where they said that Obama was born in Kenya. That's what's coming next. Okay, you know, these are times that only Mark Twain could survive in. I've stated my piece. I'm open for business. The phone number is 1-800-449-825. But before we take a break, we have to go back to George Bush. I have to play for you a little bit more of this man's speech on the emergence of the dictatorship of the radical Islamists across the Arab Crescent, introduced by George Soros, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Jimmy Carter, Hillary Clinton, and glorified by George Bush. You're not going to believe this. Listen to clip 15.
America does not get to choose if a freedom revolution should begin or end in the Middle East or elsewhere. It only
A freedom revolution? What does that mean? What's a freedom revolution? What is this man saying? What is a freedom revolution? You mean rebels who are Islamists who are worse than the people in power, the dictators? That's freedom to you? What in the world is wrong with this man's mind? I'll come right back because I have no answer.
Savage.
I can't trust Obama. I have read about him, and he's an Arab. He is not.
No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with on fundamental issues, and that's what this campaign is all about.
That's it. That was the end of McCain. Remember? Do you remember that, or don't you? You forgot this? That was the end of McCain. See, the woman was inarticulate, but she was expressing what millions of from Chicago. And there was the opportunity for McCain to do it in a dignified way. To say, well, okay, his father was a Muslim. We don't know where he was born. And this is something we should look into. And if I'm elected, you know I'm a real American. I was a patriot who served in the war. He didn't say that. In fact, he doubled down and supported Obama. Now, the very same advisors are telling Romney to do the same thing. The election's over. It's over. Not because I won't vote for Romney. I will vote for Romney. And I'll give you two reasons I'll vote for Romney. But because the hardcore conservatives will not vote for him. They're not going to come out and vote for him. They won't vote for him. They will not vote for a wishy-washy milquetoast. I'll vote for him on two issues alone. I'll vote for him on taxation and national security. I distrust Obama on national security and on taxation. It's simple as that. The rest is going to be almost a wash, incidentally. Almost identical. That's about it. 1-800-449-8255. How do you feel about learning today that a publication from 1991 put out a booklet now by a literary agency when Obama was an unknown and they were trying to peddle his books? They produced a booklet in 1991 by the agency Acton and Distel. It touts Obama as born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. The booklet was distributed to business colleagues in the publishing industry and includes a brief biography of President Obama among the biographies of 89 other authors represented by Acton and Distel. So, does that change anything for you? Do you feel now that he was born in Kenya and he should be dismissed from office? There should be a national trial on this issue. Do you feel it's untrue? Do you feel that although you can see the booklet with your own eyes by going on to Breitbart or Drudge or MichaelSavage.com, now it's all over the media. It's all over the media. It won't be in your local paper. All of the old Tom Brokaws.
This is Tom Brokaw. Brainwashing the American people for 30 years. This was Dan Rather.
They're not going to publish this. Now you understand why Warren Buffett's going to buy 63 newspapers in the Southeast. Here's the same fraud, Warren Buffett, who in 2009 said he'd never invest in a newspaper. They're money losers. He then buys the Kansas City Star because it was slightly critical of this fraud. He's like the Godfather. He's like Big Chin Gigante. In my opinion, Warren Buffett is like Big Chin Gigante. But instead of wearing a bathrobe and slippers and walking around looking like he's crazy, his costume and his act is of that of a middle-class, middle-of-the-road, middle-American businessman. But the fact of the matter is Warren Buffett got inside tips from Obama and then came out of the White House and gave a speech saying that the rich should be taxed more. And in return, he was given an inside tip on Bank of America. Then, wait a minute, it gets even better. A little while ago, Warren Buffett, the big chin of our time, comes out and says, I'm against the Keystone XL pipeline and the rich should pay more. Turns out, why is he against the Keystone XL pipeline? It makes sense. A reasonable five-year-old, a fifth grader, could figure out that if your country's starving for oil and the Arabs have you over a barrel and your friends in Canada want to send you oil from Canada through a pipeline, you build a pipeline. So why is Buffett against it? Because Buffett owns a railway line that has tanker cars that bring the oil into America by rail, a very inefficient 19th century system. So that's why Buffett's against the Keystone XL pipeline, and that's why Obama's against the Keystone XL pipeline. Do you understand how things work? No, you can't put two and two together. I can't. That's why I'm paid to be on talk radio. That's why you bought my books. That's why Trickle Down Tyranny is a very important book. It's all in there. Hidden or not hidden, it's all in there. But the issue is about Obama's literary agent in 1991, the booklet, Born in Kenya, Raised in Indonesia, Hawaii. Does this change anything for you? I was never truly a birther myself. I said, the heck with it. He was born in Hawaii. I saw the fake birth certificate, but let it go. What's the difference? Who knows where he was born? But now, wait a minute. If it's definitively true that he was born in Kenya, he's not qualified. He's not allowed to be president. It means he can't be president. Right or wrong? I'm asking you, right or wrong? Does it mean he can't be president now? Yes or no? Does it change anything? Reverend Wright throws Barack Obama down the stairs in explosive new audio. He says he tried to smear him off and shut him up before the election. Wow. I mean, this is getting pretty heavy. Look, the right thing to do is to have President Barack Obama step down in the interim while a full investigation is done about his origins, and have, he's a liberal, Joe Biden serve out the rest of his term. I mean, you're not going to have a change of administration. Biden is a Democrat and a liberal. He serves out the term. In the interim, you nullify all of his acts. You nullify his executive orders. You get Kagan and Sotomayor off the Supreme Court, and you hold a hearing on legitimate candidates. You get these illegitimate candidates thrown off the Supreme Court. They're not qualified at any speed. You know that, and I know that. Can you name one legal ruling written by Sotomayor that would qualify her to be, let alone a Supreme Court justice, even the dean of a law school? Not one. You can't name one. She's never written anything of any merit whatsoever. The same with Kagan. Nothing, not a zero. They pushed their way to the top. They were picked based upon their gender and their race. That's it. That's it. It's sickening. It's like a kangaroo court with those two on it. So you take them off the Supreme Court, and you hold new appointments to the Supreme Court with real vetting, not with Orrin Hatch on the other side, but real Republicans. Never happened. It's all dreamland. Welcome to dreamland, the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Having a campaign focused on character assassination is one of the things I find offensive, among many others, in the PAC a description that came in the New York Times. If that's accurate, why, obviously, that's something I repudiate.
Now you know why America loves their politicians so much. Here you have, 2 days after they call Romney a vampire, you have a super PAC put together with people who want to see Obama out of office. They want the Kenyan, you know, one term and gone. And Romney disavows, repudiates, attacks, has more contempt for the people who want to support him than he does for Obama. So now you wonder why people are saying, well, how could this be happening? I'm going to give you an answer. I'm going to remind you again on the Savage Nation. For over a year, I've been warning you that he's being misadvised, run off the rails by those who ran McCain off the campaign trail when McCain was ahead in 08. But you didn't believe me. You said, he's only a talk show host. What does he know? Well, I'm right again, which is why you listen to the show, because I'm usually right. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm rarely wrong. When I'm wrong, I try to tell you right away. I'm telling you that the McCain advisors are running Romney, and they want Romney to lose. Why? Because Romney's not a bad man. They want him to lose because the establishment wants Obama to have a second term. It's the way the game works. 8 years Dem, 8 years Repub. 8 years Dem, 8 years Repub. We just had, before Obama, 8 years of Bush. And they only have a half a term for a... They divide it up. It's 8-8-8, see? They had 4-8. Now the Dems got 4. They get another 4. They don't care who's in office. They pay no attention. Secondly, I was told by a higher-up that the reason they want Romney to lose, the Republicans now, is because the Republicans have never had it so good, number one. And number two, they can keep pointing their finger at Obama saying, ah, he's awful. Are you kidding? Yeah, if we had the presidency, be a whole different perfect car. Be a better America. Yeah, he's the problem. Yeah. Meanwhile, they're ripping the Treasury off left and right, the same way the Democrats are. And we're supposed to believe that they really want to win. So where does Romney fit into all of this? You can say, well, okay, go on, Savage, it's a great theory. It's a great theory, but a guy of that stature is going to take a dive? Well, let's see. Arnold Rothstein fixed the 1919 World Series. Say, that couldn't be. Well, he did. So you're telling me an election couldn't be fixed? McCain was a fall guy, a dummy. He took a dive. That's why he's despised by conservatives, because he's a dive artist. You know, he took a dive. Everyone knows that. He's a palooka. McCain is a palooka. So you say, well, okay, but he was an old guy. But could Romney be the same palooka? Hey, when there's this much at stake, who knows what they promised him? I don't have any answers to this as to why Romney would take a fall. I have no idea, but I know he's taking a fall. He can't be that naive. Let's put it to you that way. For a day after Obama calls him a vampire, to say he's not going to get into this is crazy. Then the bigger news comes out today. The bigger news, I don't have to tell you again. Brightside found a brochure, a booklet from 91, put out by a literary agency that represented Barack Obama. And they boasted that Barack Obama was born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. So where does that leave you? Has it changed your view at all? I know Democrats that wouldn't care if he was born in Mongolia. If a Democrat learned today, if it was in every newspaper owned by Warren Buffett in the United States of America, and eventually he'll own every newspaper in America, so they only publish good things about Warren Buffett and the Democrats who keep throwing him insider tips, in my opinion. If every newspaper screamed, Obama born in Russia, Obama definitively born in Mongolia, Obama born in Kenya, wouldn't matter to the average voter. They don't care. They would not care. Do you understand that they're lawbreakers? They don't care. So therefore, who's going to watch the watchers? Who are our guardians? This is a job for the FBI. Right now, the FBI has an obligation to step in. But since Obama controls the FBI, how can they step in? They have to step in and say, we have to, under the constitutional powers that were granted to us to protect the Constitution, we have to investigate whether the president is actually a natural-born citizen or not. Now, they can come back and say, well, yes, he is, but they have to do it. And all of his rulings to date have to be put on hold, nullified, and his two Supreme Court justices have to be sent back where they came from. Now, you know I'm just dreaming. It's never going to happen. You know that the bulbs, the light bulbs, the 40-watt bulbs in the media, you think they're going to follow up on this? Never. They're not going to follow up on this. How do you feel when you learn today from a book publication in 1991 that lists Obama as a Kenyan born a full 20 years before there was ever a controversy on the subject? He willfully ran and served as president of the United States when he must have known he was unqualified to legally run. What does that tell you about him? Okay, let's take the callers. Modesto, California. John, you're up on the Savage Nation.
I'll vote for a weenie before I vote for a communist. And I just want to say, I was in the Marine Corps, and all of our military are getting, they're putting them up against the law. They are getting in trouble for everything. And I just like
that's to right. Barack but, go down. But listen, I'm the only one in the media who's actually sent defense money for Marines who've been falsely accused. You know that, don't you?
Yes, I've heard that, sir.
Well, let me explain something. It didn't start with Obama. It started with George Bush. George Bush threw people in the brig who didn't belong there. There's a fellow in the brig who's in Fort Leavenworth. Listen to this one. Obama just released a terrorist from Gitmo while he refuses to release Lieutenant Behenna from Fort Leavenworth, a man who has served so beautifully for this country in the Army Rangers. The man's rotting in a dirty prison. Why is that? Explain that to me.
I just want to say it hurts me. It hurts me to see.
It hurts me, too. I've been in touch with his mother. I've tried to raise awareness and money for it. The Republicans could care less except for Congressman West. Nobody cares about our troops. Nobody. I'm sending you, sir, a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny to enjoy for the Memorial Day holiday. It'll give you as a Marine something to hold on to when you realize we still have freedom of the press. That's right. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation. Okay, but before I go to break, let me ask you, how much money do you need to earn each month? That's what IncomeAtHome.com wants to know, and they'll help you make that happen. IncomeAtHome.com is America's leading work-from-home business. They have an A-plus for their business ethics. They're affiliated with a multi-billion dollar company. Plus, they do business in over 80 countries. The bottom line is this. They are legit. No matter your age, education, or experience, you can do this. You can literally earn money on your computer from your kitchen table 24/7, even while you sleep. There's no pressure. All you need is a little spare time and their one-on-one coaching to earn great money from home. If you're sick of living paycheck to paycheck, if you're worried about job security or retirement, if you're ready to make great money from home, part-time or full-time, check out IncomeAtHome.com. They're adding my listeners in record numbers. They're even giving away $1,000 to someone just for checking them out. Check it out. Visit IncomeAtHome.com. That's IncomeAtHome.com.
Savage.
I can't trust Obama. I have read about him.
But where's the McCain
and
with
not,
the woman?
He's not. He's a. No, ma'am.
He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with on fundamental issues, and that's what this campaign is all about. He's not.
End of story. That's the end of McCain. That, as you well know, the rest is history, and now it's the end of Romney. Romney did the same thing today. Today, rich people who know Obama's a communist and bad for America, who created a super PAC, want to run ads tying Obama to Reverend Wright, as they should. He sat in the church for 20 years. And what does Romney say? Listen to clip one. Listen to clip one.
I was asked by someone here about whether I had seen the New York Times article with regards to a PAC that was presumably being formed to attack President Obama, and if I had a reaction to it, I want to make it very clear. I repudiate that effort. I think it's the wrong course for a PAC or a campaign. I hope that our campaigns can respectively be about the future and about issues.
Please, get out of here. Get your skirts dirty already. Get your suit. Who's going to vote for you but the old guard Republicans, and there's not enough of them? Stop it already, Mitt. Stop it. I try to save your campaign. Look what you just did to yourself. Unbelievable to me. All right, look, one man's opinion. I get emotional because there's so much at stake. Born in Kenya. Doesn't matter to you. Doesn't matter to you. The world's melting down because of Obama. The Arab winter. Our friends in Egypt now are in jail. Our friends in Libya, as bad as he was, they were our friends. The entire Arab Crescent went up in smoke. Israel's now got its back to the wall. Every country on earth is in chaos because of Obama. Every country on earth. Our debt is through the ceiling, inherited a trillion dollar debt. It's $4 trillion. Everything is wrong, upside down. The social order has been turned upside down. And you want four more years of this man? And this is the best Romney can talk about is, oh, but gosh, he's a nice guy. I have a few differences with him. Forget about it. Because America and the Americans who want to vote for you, Mitt, don't have a few differences with the Kenyan. They have big differences with the Kenyan. New York, WOR, Kevin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to suggest two reasons for Romney not attacking Reverend Wright. One would be the religious and racial backlash. And the second would be Romney's personal religious beliefs.
I don't quite understand it. You mean he's not allowed to talk about a reverend who said, I hate America, because it would somehow dirty Romney to say that Obama sat in that church for 20 years?
It would lower Romney's perspective of himself. He follows the Christian values. You don't have to pick on...
I agree with you. That's exactly what's wrong with him. That's exactly what's wrong with him. See, we need a separation of church and state. in the campaign as well as in the White House. I really don't care about his Christian values right now. I care about him getting up there and fighting for America. I really don't care about his self-image. It sounds like narcissism to me.
It could be.
This is Christian narcissism. What, I'm too good to get down and dirty with a guy who's smearing me in the country? They called him a vampire 2 days ago. What game is he playing here? I'm too good to fight down in the street even though they're kicking me in between the legs?
As I say, sticks and stones will break my bones. And
I understand, Kevin. He's trying to act like he's above it and he's better than them. It didn't work for McCain, did it?
It didn't.
That's my point. The people want to hear a fighter. They want someone in the corner for them. They don't want a man too good to get down and fight with Obama. And I'll tell you why. You know, there's actual wisdom in this. The wisdom is this. The average man who is powerless in this country, he knows he lives in a sham system where there is no democracy whatsoever, except every 4 years they come to us for our vote. Other than that, we live in a total dictatorship. So now we have an election. So if there's not much of a difference between the two candidates, they figure, why vote at all? That's what they're going to conclude. Now, in fact, there is a big difference between the two candidates. Taxation, national security, family values. These are all big issues, but Romney's not talking about any of them, are they? Has he said one thing about national security, how he differs than Obama? Has he been outraged at the decimation of the military? Has he said one word about Obama killing NASA? Not one word. So has he talked about family values? Yes, he did. He came out saying marriage is between a man and a woman, to his credit. Thank God he did that. I was shocked that he did that. I was stunned that he did that. But if he doesn't want to get his skirts dirty in the rough and tumble of politics, he's not fit for the election, and I'll tell you why. You want to hear why? This is an absolute brutal reality. If he can't get down and dirty with Obama, how is he going to get down and dirty with the Chinese communists, with the Arab terrorists, with the Russian bear? How is he going to get down and dirty with those people who are trying to take us down? If he can't get down and dirty with the guy he's running against, how is he going to do it with some of the most ruthless, brutal people on the planet? That's what the common man thinks. He wants a fighter for him. He wants someone to fight for him. Now, the radical, perverted left has a fighter. The radical, perverted, anti-American, anti-military, anti-police, anti-family, and anti-church left, they have a fighter in Obama. They're getting mileage for it. Those who are atheists, anti-American, I dare say even anti-white, have a leader. They have a leader. Incidentally, the latest poll shows something quite interesting on what I just said. If you think I'm just speaking out of turn and I shouldn't have said that, you're wrong. Because the latest poll, I think, I want to make sure where it was. Here, non-whites and non-religious for Obama. Gallup, non-whites, non-religious support Obama. Whites and the religious are for Romney. Gallup editor Chief Frank Newport reveals that while voter support is evenly split between President Obama and Mitt Romney, Obama leads among the non-white and non-religious, and Romney among the white and the religious. Now, let's look at that carefully. Non-white, does that include illegal aliens? Of course it does. That's why they're pandering to the so-called Hispanic vote. What do you think they're doing about? Why do you think Soros just gave millions of dollars for the so-called Hispanic vote? They want to make sure as many illegal aliens as possible vote. Leads among the non-white and non-religious, and Romney among the white and the religious. I rest my case. Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Where do you want to go? 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation. Do you agree with me that Romney needs to fight more? Does he need to take his gloves off? Pennsylvania, Doug, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Mike. And now if Mitt changes his mind and realizes he's got to go after Obama, they got a whole new line of coming after him. Oh, he said he wouldn't deteriorate to that low profile. He had no trouble at all slamming how many millions of dollars against Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich in the primaries.
Uh-huh. But he won't do it against Obama.
Going to eat him up because he doesn't have the guts. Mike, you know history. Is there any possibility of us coming up with another candidate at the convention, or is this foregone?
No, it's foregone. The establishment has picked the winner, and it's Obama. I no one wants to hear this. They want to believe there's democracy. They want to believe their vote counts. I don't blame them. It's enough to make you just jump off a bridge. If you actually believe that there's no value to your vote, what's the point of even getting up in the morning and considering yourself a free man? If we have fallen so far as a nation that our votes are rigged, and I suspect that they are, considering that a Spanish holding company owns the voting computers. I mean, what more do you need to know than that? I pointed it all out. And have you read Trickle Down Tyranny yet? Hello. Not there.
No,
I'm sending you a free copy because it's all in the book. I'm the one who pointed it out. And thanks to me, I made a big thing out of the NDAA, and an Obama judge just nullified it the other day, put it on hold. Did you know that? Did you hear that one? That's right. A judge appointed by Obama, a good liberal, said the NDAA is unconstitutional, and she put it on hold. Can you believe this? That Obama would appoint a judge he thought was a stooge because she read my book, Trickle Down Tyranny? Read the back cover.
Savage.
Michael, thanks for joining us.
Well, Governor, as always, a pleasure, and I certainly appreciate the publicity, to be frank with you.
Well, you described this as the one book that could stop President Obama from turning this from the United States of America to the United Socialist States of America, and that is really quite an indictment. Tell us and chronicle for us how, as you say in your book, while people were dancing on New Year's Eve, President Obama was taking your civil rights away when he signed the National Defense Authorization Act.
Well, let me begin, if I may, by saying you're a Democrat, you're former governor, lifetime Democrat, but I happen to know for a fact that top Democrats in the party are offended by Obama's extremism. They're offended by Obama's power grabs. They're offended by Obama's machinations, which have taken the Democrat Party, by the way, off a cliff.
Well, even the American Civil Liberties Union was shocked at this move. And I must say, frankly, I don't understand it in this particular case.
Well, under the guise of fighting terrorism, something we've all feared would happen, but Obama did it. He signed into law the National Defense Authorization Act on New Year's Eve while we were all partying. And what this means is that the military now has the authority to arrest any American citizen. Now, you say, well, come on, it means only evil, dangerous terrorists. Well, it doesn't mean that, because with this unprecedented seizure of power, our president has decimated both the Posse Comitatus Act and the writ of habeas corpus. And as you said, even the left-wing ACLU was shocked, as was Obama's own Justice Department. I believe we're now living in the Argentina of the 1970s, where the military, well, I don't know whether they've done it. Would we know? The military has almost supreme power over our lives and freedoms.
One thing that really struck me as strange about this act is that even if you say, as the president did, that this is something I don't think I'll ever have to use, wouldn't you have, let's say that we take him at his word for it for a moment, which I don't think you will, but let's say we do. Wouldn't you have reservations about putting that much power in the hands of one of your successors?
Well, that would be logical, but I'm not worried about his successor, if there ever is one, as much as I am about him, because why does he need this extreme power and this dictatorial power is what it comes down to.
Well, it's the on most, this issue, you will not get an answer from me.
I mean, this is the most anti-freedom act ever signed into American law, and the complicit media let it go almost unnoticed. So I say, if this was done in the dark of New Year's Eve, what else is going on behind the scenes?
Now, I would have thought, Michael, but to be fair to you, you are not predictable, and I think it's why you have such a fantastic audience, because you do have certainly very unique and individual points of view. I would have thought, though, that a lot of people would think that this was a good idea. I would have kind of thought that they would be more popular among Republicans, because there was talk about this certainly in the 50s with issues involving the Communist Party, and talk about this in the late 60s and 70s with subversive activity that was alleged to be going on right here in the United States. Why would President Obama be doing it be wrong when I thought a lot of people would have supported if someone had done this in those two other occasions?
But they didn't do it, and they couldn't get away with it. What if George Bush under the guise of Freedom Act, whatever he called it, Patriot Act, said, I'm going to give myself the power to arrest any American citizen, but don't
There would have been widespread demonstrations on every college campus in the country.
There would have been riots and demonstrations. So I don't think that a participatory democracy, so-called, such as ours, should permit such a power grab, and yet it has. Now, you raised the interesting point. This was done, by the way, with the complicity of the Republican leadership. I know it was, because some of them, when challenged, said that it's a good idea. Now, I ask the liberals listening to this show, what happens if Romney wins in November, and he is the next president, and he inherits this dictatorial power? What's going to happen then?
Well, I think that, oddly enough, some people who have been silent because President Obama did it, if Romney even made any reference to the fact that he might use it, would now blame it on him. The way I think some people blamed all the economy problems on Obama almost immediately after he took office.
Well, I don't blame Obama for the economic problems that we have. He just made them worse. He inherited a $1 trillion deficit, and he's blown it into a $3 or $4 trillion deficit, which to me is like drunkenness. It's insanity. You don't fix a deficit by making it bigger, unless you don't even understand the basis of a balance sheet. You can't do that in your own household. I can't do it. What bank? Let's say you owe a bank $1 million or $100,000, and your income is about $100,000, and you go to the bank and say, "Could I have another $300,000?" They'll say, "Sorry, you need equity." Well, okay, I'm going to put up the United States of America as equity, which we've just sold to China. Where does this end? When do we get our nation back? My premise, it goes beyond the NDAA. I have stated in Trickle-Down Tyranny, and believe me, I document every statement, and it was read by the lawyers at Harper's. This is not a self-published book. I believe that any intelligent person reading it would come to the conclusion that I have, that we are seeing the demise of our republic. But it didn't start with Obama. I want to emphasize that. It did not start with him. I was calling George Bush a fiscal socialist in the last 2 years of his regime. Remember that.
I actually do remember that. I actually heard you say that. Let me ask you this about the book. And I've got to say, this is challenging, and it really makes me think, and I think it'll make my listeners think as well. And I commend it to all of you, that regardless of what you've heard or even listening to Michael, and Michael can have a little rant now and then, but the point is, this is a challenging book intellectually, which I think is what the society could benefit from. But I find the depiction of this sort of dictatorial power as being almost a little contradictory. Let me give you an example. Let's say he wants to reward poverty and he's a socialist. Those things go together. But decreasing the military at the same time that you are abridging others' rights, how are you ever going to enforce it? Do you see what I'm saying?
You're saying if I say he is giving the military all this power, then I say factually that he is downsizing the military. Is that in conflict? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Yes.
Well, the answer is simple. You don't need that many members of the military to round up a person off the streets. How many people does it take in a black car to take someone off the streets? I mean, four guys in a car could take anyone off the street.
Okay, all right. But parts of the book you talk about, in a sense, the reward for corporations and cronies, and you say that the deep pockets get rewarded, while at the same time you say that the people in poverty get rewarded.
The rich who support him have tax loopholes, and I can certainly give you examples from Trickle-Down Tyranny. People who earn their money, who are wealthy, are being targeted by Obama while he goes to them for fundraisers at night, which is utterly unbelievable. Here, George Soros, we have a picture of him today on my website, okay, lounging by a pool in Miami with other very powerful Democrats raising money for Obama. Do you know that they're supporting the Occupy movement? How can billionaires support the Occupy movement? You may ask yourself why. And it's being reported today. Ultra-wealthy liberal donors are there at the hotel at the 150-acre tropical resort. And there's workshops such as Occupy the Voting Booth, the 1% Rule. Now, why would they be in cahoots with the street radicals? Governor, you understand better than I do how politics works. I'm only a talk show host. But something is crazy here. So you have to ask yourself, is that their secret army to upset people, to upset workers, to block the Brooklyn Bridge, to upset Wall Street? Why would George Soros and his trillionaire cronies want to do that? Because these guys, many of them, are living behind tax loopholes, tax shelters. They're not paying their fair share at all. And what they're doing is they're deflecting anger at the people who are not connected, who are making a good living. They want them taxed, and they don't want the radicals to come after them. Does George Soros want 1,000 people banging on the doors of his house, wherever he may live, or his apartment in Manhattan? No, she says, I'm on your side. I'm going to give you money. That means I'm buying you off so you don't come after me. They're just buying them off.
Now, that is certainly interesting. I look at it a little differently. I think that money, the root of all evil, is also the root of all politics, and that both the Republican and Democratic parties, in a sense, the Demopublicans, while having these campaign promises that they make to the public, are really serving industries, making them larger, and in many respects, squeezing the American people. And President Obama, who is very good at giving speeches almost as if it's a grassroots movement, his administration, nor did the Bush administration, really do anything about the frittering of large amounts of money away by reckless corporate entities on Wall Street. And in addition to that, that they didn't even bother to in any way try to change the system that allowed it to happen, and inevitably bleeding taxpayer money off all of us.
Let's look at some of the corporations who get away with paying almost no U.S. taxes. General Electric is the first that comes to mind. And it's no coincidence that GE is owned by General Electric owns NBC and MSNBC, the most pro-Obama network imaginable, never, ever criticizing him no matter what he does. But did you know that GE did not pay any taxes on the $5.1 billion it earned in the United States in 2010? But it actually got a $3.2 billion corporate tax credit. This is on page 79 of Tyranny.
Right. And see, that's what's so interesting, Michael. What you just point out is because the same people who were supporting the Occupy movement never point out that piece of information.
But do you know how GE does this? GE maintains the largest and best corporate tax department in the world. They have several thousand former IRS agents working for them. They filed a 50,000.
How did you find that out?
They filed a 50,000-page-long tax return in 2010. I have that. Its profit was $14 billion, nearly three times the year before. And once again, GE paid no corporate taxes. That's because Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric benefits immeasurably from Obama's selective Leninist tax strategy, which is built on providing political favor to the administration's allies. So you want to pay fair taxes. Let's start with General Electric. How about other companies? And I name them. Pacific Gas and Electric, Wells Fargo, no federal taxes for the past 3 years. Wells Fargo also received a number of tax subsidies. Hewlett Packard, Yahoo, Levi Strauss paid taxes at less than half the 35% corporate tax rate. I have the data in here. I'm not just talking out of the side of my mouth, creating hot air. So I don't care whether you're a liberal or a conservative or if you're Pinocchio himself. We can't survive in a nation where people who run major corporations like this are able to pay no taxes. It's impossible.
Well, Michael, let me ask you this. You've written Trickle Down Tyranny. It's here now. The election's coming up in November. The latest New York Times CBS poll shows Romney ahead by a point. Suppose Romney wins in November. Is that the end of Trickle Down Tyranny, or what happens next?
Well, Romney is a liberal Republican. Romney will continue the policies that we saw under Bush and many of the policies that Obama has initiated. The only benefit to voting for Romney, as far as I am concerned, from my point of view, will be in the areas of national security and taxation of the individual. And I think those are very important issues. I do not sleep well at night because Obama seems to hate Israel, seems to cater to the radical Islamic regimes in the Middle East, and seems to have pushed Israel into a corner. I don't understand how anybody cannot see this for what it is. As far as taxation, I, for one, I've worked hard for every dollar I have. I want to hold on to as much of it as I can. and give it to the elephant preservation funds and the bear preservation funds and the dog preservation funds that I currently give it to, rather than giving it to an unnamed government bureaucrat. You see what I'm saying? I give away some money, but I'd like to save the elephants from being poached and their tusks ripped out of their beautiful noble heads. I'd like to save the bears from being tortured in China. I do as much as I can. You know, we give money for veterans, for dogs, et cetera. So that's where I'd like to see some of the money going instead of into the hands of the unnamed bureaucrats with their fat pensions. So you can understand that Romney will probably be very good on taxes for men like you and me.
Okay. Well, thank you. But you don't have to miss him when he's away. You can pick up Trickle Down Tyranny. And I hope that all of you have enjoyed this exchange, because it just is thought-provoking, and Michael can be provoking, but always prepared. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Well, Governor, when you're reelected governor of New York State, make me a czar, will you please?
Well, absolutely. We'll have trickle-up tyranny.
Yeah, that's right. We'll run the world. I want to be the radio czar of New York State, Governor.
There we go. Well, thanks so much, and talk to you soon.
Now, here's the question of the hour. How do you think the mainstream media is going to cover up the literary issue, the issue of the literary agency saying that he was born in Kenya? They've done it already. I want to show you how fast the Obama media machine works. This just came out from ABC News, always Bolshevik crap. Born in Kenya, Obama's literary agent misidentified his birthplace in 1991. They've already covered it up. She says that she made a mistake. It just came out already. They've done it already. They're that fast. They're that quick on their feet. And to top it all off, they've attacked Romney for trying to distance himself from the right Obama attack ads. They attacked Obama. They attacked Romney. Tried to be Mr. Gentleman. Wouldn't lift it. And he got beaten up. This guy's unbelievable. But here's ABC's cover up already. I'm going to read it to you whole. Came out from ABC a minute ago. You're hearing it first in the Savage Nation. You don't even have to wait for tomorrow. ABC covers up Kenya birth of Obama. A possible source of the so-called birther issue, or at least the potential cause of the rumors that have dogged President Obama, has been identified. Obama's former literary agency misidentified his birthplace as Kenya while trying to promote the then Harvard Law grad as an author. According to a promotional booklet produced by the agency Acton and Distel to showcase its roster of writers, Obama was, quote, stated to be born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. Miriam Goodrich edited the text of the bio. She is now a partner at the Distel and Goodrich agency, which lists Obama as one of its current clients. Quote, listen what she says. This was nothing more than a fact-checking error by me, an agency assistant at the time. Goodrich wrote in an email statement to Yahoo News. She said, there was never any information given to us by Obama in any of his correspondence or other communications suggesting anyway that he's born in Kenya, not Hawaii. I hope you can communicate to your readers that this was a simple mistake and nothing more. So it's over. Well, I'll tell you how you really put this to rest. Assuming that Ms. Goodrich, not to be confused with Mr. Goodwrench, assuming that the literary agent Ms. Goodwrench is not lying now, there's only one way to prove this. Well, there's another way to prove it, which is for Obama to release his Harvard records. We've got to see his admission materials, where he states where he was born. We've got to see when he was initiated as the president of the, or the, whatever they call it, Harvard Law Review, big deal. Shows you what they put out of Harvard today, a big deal. Harvard Law Review, a real genius. But let's say, in order to become enter Harvard, you have to have an admission form, I would think. Or have they disavowed admission forms now? I don't know. Maybe they just take you in if you're of a certain particular category and they just make you a Harvard law graduate. They can give you the degree when you walk through the door. Nevertheless, let's see his records at Harvard. How hard is that to ask for? Then what, we're going to have the Harvard schmuck get up and say, I misidentified it as Kenya. I was a clerk at the time. I didn't really know where he was born. I put down Kenya. You see, there's no end to this. There's so much at stake that it doesn't matter what you find. It's never going to come out to be true. Because there is no truth. In the Brave New World that was warned, we were warned about by the great genius George Orwell, War is peace, especially if it's a Democrat war. Remember, Afghanistan was a war when it was Bush as President Vaynerchuk. Now that we're in Afghanistan and it's Obama's war, war is peace. And as Orwell warned us, in Brave New World, lies are truth and truth are lies. So already they've covered for the Kenya thing. So don't get too excited. It's over already. That's according to Mrs. Goodwrench. Said she was a clerk and made a mistake. Do you believe her? Yes or no? Do you believe Mrs. Goodwrench, or do you think that they have pressured her in some way? Or is Ms. Goodwrench a diehard liberal? What do you think is the truth?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now the audio from today, including socialist senator from Brooklyn, I mean Vermont, Bernie Sanders, saying we need to break up the big banks.
When you heard that J.P. Morgan Chase lost $2 billion in this one bet, what was the first thing that went through your mind? Because I've been reading some of your statements.
What went through my mind is these guys have learned absolutely nothing. Same old, and it scares me in terms of the future and the fact that we may once again have to bail them out. Look, if these guys are continuing doing reckless bets, which got us to where we are right now, which forced the American people to bail out Wall Street, which led to this terrible recession, hurt so many people, it tells me that these guys have learned nothing. We need to re-regulate. And in my view, Wolf, we need to start breaking up these huge banks which control so much of our economy.
And you need to hear Reverend Wright talk about how his relationship with President Obama.
My point has been, and I said, I haven't said this publicly to anybody, that you talk about Toni Morrison, or you talk about, I know other cases, Maya Angelou, you talk about these black women, they grew up in a church, most of them.
Yes.
She didn't. She grew up in a Hyde Park kind of Jack and Jill, Lynx, middle income, who think they're middle class. Environment. She ended up church affiliation.
Father was a priest and captain.
And when she came to the church, both of them came to the church. Their kids weren't raised in the church like you raise other kids in Sunday school and this, you know?
No.
No. Because that church is not their thing. It never was their thing. It wasn't, we knew it wasn't his, but she was not the kind of black woman whose mama made her go to church, made her go to Sunday school, made her go to BYPU, if the Baptist, or Richard Allen, if the Methodist. She wasn't raised in that kind of environment, so the church was not an integral part of their lives before they got married, after they got married.
But the church was an integral part of his politics.
Yeah.
Because he needed that base.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Senator Harry Reid, Nevada, say that he is fed up with Republican obstructionism.
It's almost universally acknowledged that Republican obstructionism has reached new heights in the Senate. Democrats would have to break a filibuster, I guess, to declare the sky blue or the earth is round. And passing even the most common sense consensus legislation can take weeks or months to shower the wealthy with tax breaks paid for by the middle class. Every moment we waste refighting old battles or revisiting Republicans' failed economic policies is a time that could be better spent creating jobs. The time for show votes is over.
I think what I'm going to do is going to put on the life coach hat. Remember I did that last week? It was very popular. I told you there's a new trend where people are bypassing state licensing and they're becoming what's known as coaches. People who are such idiots who would pay them, I don't understand it, but it's a big trend. Apparently they charge a fortune. You call them up like you have a trip to, and you can't stand your husband, for example. and you really hate your children, you don't want to be with them, and you're feeling conflicted about going anywhere with them, skiing, you don't want to be in the room with them. The thought of it is giving you claustrophobia and hives. But you're afraid to tell anybody because they'll think that you're a bad person, so you don't know who to turn to. You're afraid to even turn to a psychiatrist for fear they'll turn you into to the state. So you're going to a life coach. You're paying them $300 an hour. So an hour before you get in the car, wherever you're going to go to, like the Poconos to go skiing, you call Roberta Life Coach, and she tells you, don't worry, it'll be okay, just take some pills and drink. And you say, I feel much better. So I'm going to be Life Coach Mike now for about the next segment on the Savage Nation. If you have a life problem that you would like answered, give me a ring at 1-800-449-8255. If you're lucky enough to get on the show, you're going to get thousands of dollars of advice for nothing. For 2 cents plain, you're going to get it. I'm serious. You know how good I am at this because I have common sense. There's one thing Donald Trump said about me that I liked. It's the only thing he said about me that I liked, because the only thing he ever said about me is I was at Mar-a-Lago. Someone invited me to a lunch there. It was a very nice lunch. And Donald Trump arrived on the scene, and everyone clustered around him because he's the king. It's his place. And he runs a great place, by the way. So I don't know how he looked over at me, and he almost like benighted me with like a wand, a mental wand. He said, Michael Savage, you've got common sense. You go beyond politics, he said. You've got common sense. You could literally feel the crowd go, ooh, you know what I'm saying? And all the billionaires started to cluster around me. They wanted to walk with me into the dining room after that. It was safe to be with Michael Savage because I had common sense. I was no longer politically, I was no longer a political outcast. So why don't you try my common sense? If you've got a problem or you want to talk, if you really rather talk about the news, go ahead. I've thrown out 100 news stories. You don't seem to care about Wisconsin and that Obama sent out the buses and the rent-a-children. Like some dude, that's the governor, who is simply asking the teachers and other employees to pay 5.8% of their salary toward their own pension, which is about the private sector national average, and about 12% of the health care benefits should be paid by them, which is about half the private sector national, saying that he's a Nazi and Hitler because he wants to balance the budget. New York, first call on Dr. Mike. Peter on WOR, thank you for calling. There's the Dr. Mike hat is on. What's on your mind?
Dr. Mike, how are you, sir?
Yeah, what's on you? What's your question for the life coach?
This is my problem, Dr. Mike. I was a city teacher, and I had to leave the profession because of the liberals that I was surrounded by. The liberals making excuses for the current nanny state that we have in New York. I don't know if you know, but they're trying to ban smoking even in public places, outdoors.
Oh, yeah, they're banned it in the and they banned it in prisons so that they would be, listen to this. The poor guys are locked up for X years of their life, so they ban smoking in prisons, and guess what they put them on? Medication. Medication instead of cigarettes. And take a guess who benefits from putting these prisoners on medication? The drug companies. Okay, so anyway, so what's the question?
Well, also, right now there's a budget issue with Mayor Bloomberg, and he wants to lay off teachers. I left the profession, but he's trying to lay off teachers. And
so you and took an early buyout. So what's the question? You did already what you had to do.
Right, right. Well, my question was, how do I deal, because when I explain to liberals, because you know how combative and miserable they are in general.
Oh, miserable human beings.
They are.
Miserable. All of them grew up hating the world. They had miserable parents with oilcloth underneath it, and they taught them that America's no good, capitalism is evil, all businessmen are thieves, everything is bad. Then they sent him to camps in the Poconos on some union camp for red diaper dopa baby children. And they turned out to be horrendous women and men. See, what do you want to know, how to deal with them?
Sometimes I just need to know, I mean, do I count to 10? What do I do? Because I just...
Well, you do the way I did. Move out of New York. Well, that doesn't help because I'm in a worse city than New York. You see, New York's actually a better city than San Francisco because you have such a large population that you might encounter... A sane person, 1 out of 5, might be sane. 4 out of 5 are psychotic liberals. But 1 out of 5 might be a patriotic American. San Francisco, it's 10 out of 9 are psychotic. So I become a hermit and just talk to my dog and ride my bicycle and do my radio show, write my books. What else is there to do? You know how I approach life now, Peter? Honest to God. People will disappoint you no matter what their politics are. The truth is that it's the fault of the apple. You know what I'm saying? It's the fault of the apple. The crystal is blemished. There's no perfection on earth.
Wait, hang on. Before I go, you know that USA Today reports that nearly 20% of parents plan to take a second job to pay bills. They're doing whatever it takes to be good providers. If you want to earn money, there's a smarter way. Listen to how best-selling author and financial advisor Ray Lucia describes IncomeAtHome.com. He says this is an amazing way to earn a significant income in your spare time. Their proven step-by-step system is the secret to starting your own cash-generating home-based internet business. They're A-plus rated and affiliated with a multi-billion dollar company doing business in over 80 countries. Visit IncomeAtHome.com. Write it down, IncomeAtHome.com. IncomeAtHome.com. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I think that when people support you, it doesn't mean that you support everything they say. Obviously, those words and those statements are statements that none of us would associate ourselves with, and I don't believe that Senator Obama would support any of those.
Nice to be with you this evening. I hope you're enjoying the show thus far. We're putting aside all threats from the Muslim Brotherhood and from the meddler in the White House. We're putting aside the thuggery of the unions, George Soros's megalomania and desire to take over the world. We're putting aside all the temporary problems of the world, and I'm going to answer your questions. Are they sexual in nature, financial, personal? Is it a problem with your boss? Is it with your husband? This is Mike Savage, Life Coach. Wisconsin Shannon, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I need help with the fact that I'm a hardcore Democrat. My husband is a hardcore Republican.
So what's the problem?
Well, every time there's something going on in our state or federal, like right now the situation in Wisconsin, it sparks huge arguments between the two of us.
So do what women have done for centuries, withhold sex.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Why?
We have a six-month-old baby, so it doesn't happen very often anyways.
Well, that's what babies are for, aren't they? To keep the husband away.
It's the best birth control ever, that's for
absolutely.
Sure.
I mean, one of the reasons women used to have babies every year or so was to make sure the husband left them alone. Well, I don't know what the problem is. You're not going to change his mind. He's not going to change yours. You're a communist and he's a Republican. What are you going to do?
Is there any way to, like, even it out some?
Well, I mean, is there any way for him to reach you with any reason? In other words, if your state is broke and bankrupt and the governor's asking teachers to pay a small amount towards their own pension and their own health care, does that not make sense to you? Where should the money come from? Where should the money come from?
There's other ways to cut spending.
Wait, hold on. What do you mean there are other ways to cut spending? Why is it that people who work for a private company contribute to their own pensions and their own health care, but government workers should not? Is that fair? You're a Democrat. You're a fair-minded Democrat. Why should state workers be exempt from sharing the burden of supporting themselves?
Teachers don't make very much for wages.
A very good point, but neither do people in the private sector today. At least they have a job in teaching. They have a job that's secure. That's better than a lot of people who don't have any job at all.
Understandable.
You see, Shannon, things have changed. The world is not what it was when your parents were alive. Thank you for the call. Oh, does that husband have trouble? I see there's no way to reason with people when they make... Salt Lake City, Ryan, what's your question for Dr. Savage?
Hey, Dr. Savage. I'm 33 years old. I have a bachelor's degree, but I'm thinking about going back to get my MBA. I just don't know if it's going to pay off in the long run if I spend the $50,000 to get the MBA. Is it going to pay off for me later on?
My suggestion is forget the MBA, spend $400 on a life coach degree, and become a life coach. You'll make more money faster.
true.
I hear people are doing it. They're actually paying some people money to get some kind of, like, experience in being a life coach. How the heck could you become a life coach if you haven't lived?
Yeah, I don't know.
What are they going to advise people of if they haven't gone through it themselves? Now, as far as an MBA goes, I don't know. There was a time when it was a union card to a job in a corporation. Do MBAs really teach you today what you need to know in this economy? I can't answer that question. Do you have a family business, perhaps, that you're thinking of taking over? Or you got to create your own business?
Well, as of right now, I'm already employed, and it's always kind of been a dream of mine to be an entrepreneur and maybe start a business. But
Then why do you need an MBA? An MBA requires a good idea, some money, and the ability to go ahead and do it. You don't need an MBA for that. I mean, you need to know the basic principles of a business, marketing, etc. You need to know how to do that, but I don't know that you don't need a degree for that today. You could go on the internet right now and you could run a search that says, what do I need to know to run a small business? Give me 10 steps. You can probably find it in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, and that's true. But I mean, if that doesn't work out, if I need to, you know, lean back on a larger corporation, will it give me a head?
All right. That's another point. In other words, if you're looking to tomorrow in a more competitive marketplace, the MBA certainly would distinguish you from an applicant with an ordinary bachelor's degree in that regard. Yes. I'm always for that higher degree if it's from a decent university, and that's what you want. If, on the other hand, you're looking really to be an entrepreneur, you've got to think about what your best ideas might be. You know, the old statement, build a better mousetrap and people will be a path to your doorstep. It's still true, by the way. It is still true. In fact, even in a down economy, people are still spending money, right?
Right.
Okay. So it's not like suddenly no one's buying anymore. They're not trading like oyster shells for their dinner. They're spending money. So if you put out a better product in a restaurant, people are going to go to it at a good price. Or whatever I don't know what your ideas are. You have to start thinking about your ideas rather than the degree. I put my ideas ahead of my degrees. Then I'd worry about it. You could hire an MBA to be your partner. Hire an MBA who killed himself for 3 years and make him the CFO and give him a piece of the business. Let him figure out all the angles of the business if you have a good idea. And you could you could sidestep having to go to school.
All right.
I know some of the people I know who are the most successful, whether they be in the media or in business, never even went to college, by the way. And they are multimillionaires because they had a good idea and they were willing to invest their own time and energy and build that business. And it could still be done. As I say, even in a down economy, there are products that have not yet been invented that people who are looking for a way out of a down economy would if I was hungry for money right now, I could come up with 5 ideas to get people to follow me right now and to give them the hope that they might find a way out of the morass they're in. I wouldn't do it because I don't want to exploit anybody.
Savage.
$3 billion gone up in smoke. J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, friend of Obama, bundler for Obama. Now the Obama administration is trying to use this mistake by Chase, J.P. Morgan, as a reason for more regulation. Well, that would be nice if it really would regulate these type of people. But Mark Calabria, the director of financial regulation studies at the Cato Institute, they're a libertarian group, says that bad decision. I'm not so sure I agree with Mark. Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you.
Mark, give me your opinion of what went on with J.P. Morgan so-called losing $3 billion. Where's the money?
Well, let's preface with that we're still trying to figure out all the details of the trade. But from what we seem to know is that J.P. Morgan essentially engaged in a bet to hedge its commercial bond portfolio. And so essentially it seemed to be that if the direction of the economy continued to do well and commercial bonds did well, that they would lose money. And if the economy went the other way, they would make money. So to some extent, this was a hedge of commercial lending activity. Still, there might be more left to lose. We don't know what the final numbers are going to be. And it's also important to keep in mind that unlike a whole loan that's held on a bank balance sheet, these hedges are marked to markets. That means they're revalued every day. So that also means that the losses could go in the other direction and be smaller. So I'd say it's far too early to know what the ultimate number is going to be.
If you say that this doesn't make the case for regulation, then it does anything? What does? They should have no regulation?
Well, I would start with, I think one always needs to distinguish between regulation by whom? Regulation by the market participants, regulation by government. I certainly don't think that a bank taking a loss, even a regular large loss in absolute terms, although their own capital is over $100 billion, so at no point is this jeopardizing the solvency of J.P. Morgan. In fact, it still looks like that the last quarter they made more than enough to offset this loss. So I certainly don't think the objective of regulation should be a zero-error environment. In fact, I think that over the long run, our financial system is more secure if you have lots of little errors, because it reminds market participants that there is risk. I'm far more concerned in terms of financial crises when we go through long periods with no losses and lots of profits, because, of course, that's when everybody gets complacent. So, again, this is not something that threatens the bank. I don't think it certainly doesn't threaten our financial system. The things did not come to a freeze. People were able to use their credit cards and such. So there were no systemic implications of this. There was never any loss of risk to the taxpayer, nor was there any loss of risk to the Federal Deposit Insurance Fund. It's important to keep in mind that the deposit taking commercial bank of J.P. Morgan Chase is in a separate company, a separate subsidiary from the investment bank, and they are separately capitalized. So you could have certainly seen a situation, not from this trade, but you could see a situation where the investment bank itself fails, but the commercial bank does not. So, again, we have to keep in mind that there are divisions between this. And we also have to keep in mind that I think that this proves that you can have an investment bank, a major investment bank, take billions of losses. And, again, our financial markets don't have a hiccup without actually having taxpayer assistance. So, if anything, to me, it questions the wisdom of the repeated bailouts and the repeated actions we saw, not just in 2008, but before, where liquidity and money was thrown at investment banks anytime there are problems in the marketplace. So I think we need to rethink that. I think we need to move to a system that far more relies on people taking losses. I'll also note that, unlike with our regulators, so far at least three employees have been dismissed, and I think that's the way it's supposed to work. You know, you make a gamble, you make a bad bet, and I would say everything is speculation. The ideal that somehow credit default swaps are risky and mortgage lending, for instance, is not risky, I think has certainly been proven wrong. So again, you have to have improved risk management at these banks, but I'm far more willing to believe that this is going to happen from the banking side, demands from shareholders and other market participants and counterparties than I am believing it's going to come from Tim Geithner.
Wasn't Dodd-Frank supposed to stop situations like this from happening?
Well, that depends on whether you read what Dodd-Frank promises and then actually look at the real details. I don't really think anybody except Mr. Dodd, Mr. Frank, actually believe that it ends too big to fail. And, of course, I would say it wasn't actually meant to get at this. There's still a debate because we are trying to still seeing the particulars of the trade, whether this would have been prohibited by the Volcker rule or not. If this was a true hedging activity, and again, let's remember, this was a $2, maybe $3 billion loss on almost an $800 billion corporate loan portfolio. And so if they were essentially trying to hedge that portfolio, this would have not been prohibited by the Volcker rule. And, of course, I think even Mr. Todd and Frank would say that this is not meant to stop every single loss that every bank makes. So, again, I was never very optimistic about Dodd-Frank. I certainly think we should take its boosters with a massive grain of salt.
Okay. How did the Fannie and Freddie crisis of 2003 and this J.P. Morgan crisis compare?
Well, I think ultimately the Freddie and Fannie problem has been much bigger. Obviously we're looking at $2 to $3 billion so far. The taxpayer has put in, close to $200 billion to Fannie and Freddie. It's also worth noting that in 2008, J.P. Morgan lost $1 billion on its holding of Freddie and Fannie preferred shares. So, the real problem, is not simply size but also interconnectedness. In pre-crisis, you had Freddie and Fannie securities held by the banking system that were 150% of the banking system's capital. So Freddie and Fannie would get in a hiccup and essentially the entire banking system would go down because the government stepped in. The only losses were on preferred shares. And so you did see a number of smaller banks fail because of that. And again, banks like J.P. Morgan took significant losses because of Freddie and Fannie. It's not as if J.P. Morgan's debt is held by the banking system like its treasuries. And unfortunately, we allow, as a matter of public policy and a matter of market practice, for Fannie and Freddie debt to be treated the centuries as treasuries. And as we have found out, just as Europe has found out with Greek debt, that despite what you call these things, they actually entail a lot of risk. And of course, I think the perception even today of too big to fail was much bigger with Freddie and Fannie, is still much bigger with Freddie and Fannie than it is with J.P. Morgan. And again, the argument, there's even no discussion today about even really winding down Freddie and Fannie with the thinking of this is the mortgage market. I would argue that if J.P. Morgan actually did bring on insolvency, we would be able to separate its parts and sell out those parts and actually survive as a financial system, whereas many argue that you simply cannot do without Freddie and Fannie in this housing market, or arguably probably any housing market. So I think the systemic implications of Freddie and Fannie are far greater than those with J.P. Morgan. And it says a lot about Dodd-Frank, in my opinion, that Dodd-Frank does nothing about Freddie and Fannie.
But we know that the Dodd-Frank bill isn't the answer to fix this problem. It was written by the bankers, for the bankers.
Well, I think first we need to define what the problem is. You know, I am only really concerned about systemic problems that threaten the system. I'm not concerned about small losses. Again, as I mentioned, I think it's important actually for the system to take regular small losses in order to remind us. And I guess I should emphasize as well, J.P. Morgan is losing $2 to $3 billion. Somebody or somebody's is making $2 to $3 billion off of J.P. Morgan. So it's important to keep in mind system-wide losses from this are zero. It's just somebody else's gain, whereas when we bet the entire system on the direction of the housing market, that wasn't so pretty. So, again, you need to be concerned about things that are systemic. I think we also need to be concerned about, you know, what are the macro factors? You know, I don't believe that regulators or bankers or anybody really is perfect, and there's always going to be, in my opinion, some degree of human error. So the system, the objective of the system should not be to try to eliminate error. It should be how do you make a system that deals with error, learns from error. But you also need to worry about the larger macroeconomic environment. Quite simply, when we had 3 years of negative real federal funds rates from 2002 to 2005, my opinion is if you set up an environment where you're essentially paying people to borrow, you're almost always going to get a credit bubble out of that, which is going to have a quite nasty aftermath. And unfortunately, we're essentially reproducing that. I don't think Global basically failed in the same way that Bear Stearns did, despite the fact that it was post-Dodd-Frank. So, again, we've set up a lot of the same perversities in our system that were there. We have not dealt with, I think, some of the underlying issues. Again, I would emphasize monetary policy. But I would also say that, to me, you really need – the ultimate solution is to bring some market discipline back into this. We need to put creditors at risk. And I guess what I would characterize it this way, we ultimately want to try to – replace relatively weak incentives of regulators. I mean, none of them get fired when they screw up. None of them seem to pay the price. In fact, some, you know, I would say there's no institution that failed more than the New York Fed, and their president during that time got a promotion to the Treasury Secretary. So it's pretty perverse incentives, in my opinion. Whereas, you know, creditors and market participants who lend to these institutions when they have their own money at risk, I think are going to perform far more due diligence. But unfortunately, the reaction during the crisis was, how do we try to protect creditors from any losses? And I think that's the absolute wrong direction to go. And in many ways, Dodd-Frank extends and repeats, you know, what has long been the existing framework of too big to fail. So really doubles down on too big to fail, in my opinion. Number of other certainly features in the market we need to fix. I mean, the role of the credit rating agencies needs to be fixed, and the just excessive regulatory reliance on credit ratings, I think, is problematic and certainly a contributor to the crisis. Obviously, Freddie and Fannie's, as we've mentioned, you know, also, you know, no, we are, our tax code subsidizes debt and penalizes equity. You know, the difference, you essentially have to pay tax on dividends, and interest paid is expensible. You really end up driving a massive wedge that encourages corporations to become leveraged. It's not a surprise, in my opinion, that banks are highly leveraged. It's a surprise given the incentives they face, why they're not more leveraged. So again, those are things we need to deal with. And of course, you know, there are a variety of home ownership subsidies and housing subsidies. And I certainly would say housing was not the only sector that got us in trouble during this crisis. Certainly anything that was interest rate sensitive from commercial real estate, like shopping malls and office buildings, also boomed and bust. So you really need to worry about things that are interest rate sensitive. But I would end that with saying, if you have just reckless monetary policy like we've had, you will get bad outcomes, and that was exactly what drove this crisis, and that was the primary contributor as well to the SNL crisis. So we don't seem to have learned a lot from trying to make credit cheap and easy.
Mark, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, it's really been terrific to be here. Great to talk to you. And certainly encourage everybody to take a look at our website, www.cato.org.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
already can't multitask. They can't multi-hear. They grew up doing one thing at a time. The younger generation can do multiple things at a time, but all wrong. They're able to multitask, but they do everything wrong. They can't write a letter correctly. They can't type correctly. Nothing. I never saw anything like it. People do everything wrong. No matter what you ask people to do today, they can't get anything right, particularly if they're under 50. They can't work. They don't want to work right. I was raised in a time when the work ethic was king. I mean, you had to work. You had to work, and you had to do a good job. It was an honor. It was a mark of a person's self-respect, dignity, manhood, to be a worker and a good one. That's how I was raised. It was drummed into me from early childhood. And then you wake up and you see children. They won't clean a boat. They won't clean a house. I mean, pay them. You can't find an American kid, a white kid, to do any kind of work. They won't clean a boat. They won't clean a house. They won't babysit. They won't walk a dog. They're a bunch of spoiled drug addicts. An entire generation of children raised to think that the world owes them a living. And they walk around with a snotty attitude that I don't know where it comes from. You know, look, I got to be harsh about this. I watch, you know, I largely live in the suburbs. I stay in the city part-time, and I move around through many locations for obvious reasons. But a lot of my time is spent in the safe white suburbs, so to speak. I mean, let's call it like what it is. No matter how liberal they say they are, they don't want anyone around them who doesn't look like them, even though they vote lib. That's the way they are. And you watch them in their child raising, and sometimes you have to shake your head. Whether it be a young mother who probably is on a prescription drug herself and all she's obsessed with is her abs, feeding her child a jelly donut and a cocoa in the morning on her way to school along with his Ritalin tablet, knowing nothing about diet and a child's behavior, nothing, and she doesn't want to know about it. All she wants to know is to get the brat into school so she can go have the affair or go to the exercise class for 4 hours. Whether it is a pair of white parents who are a little older than I was when I had my first child, taking a brat to a restaurant, 8, 8:30, 9, I shake my head. When do they stay home with them? When do they stay home? Don't they do homework? Isn't there a safe time to go to a restaurant where you don't have to listen to? And the crayons. Fine dining around a kid with a crayon or a coloring book? I can't even digest when they pull out the Crayolas. Why are they in the restaurant with the child, with Crayolas, educating them? And they always do it to show how smart they are and the child is. Last night I went to a place, it was downscale Italian. I figured I could escape it, but no, it got worse. There was a father at an adjacent table. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. I had to take the food home, I had to leave. Now, he wasn't a bad guy, don't get me wrong. But I had to listen to an entire lesson. As the children are eating, he says to them, during the Cuban Missile Crisis of the 1960s, who was president? I'm not making this up. And the children have to repeat to the father, who was the attorney on the U.S. Supreme Court? And I'm trying to eat. I couldn't even get a piece of bread down my gullet. So as I say, I packed it up and left. What is this lesson at a dinner? Why do I have to hear it to understand you're a smart, liberal man? And you're intelligent and your children are as bright as you, and they're going to learn to screw everyone around them when they grow up like you do for a living with your law degree? That's what you're telling me? That they're not going to be like the ordinary person? They're going to learn how to screw everybody just like daddy? Why do I have to hear this? Is there no hour when there are no children? Now, look, I love children. I raise children. But at a certain point, it seems to me it's child abuse to have them in a restaurant. So I say to myself, don't they do homework anymore? I know they don't babysit. I know they don't wash a car or a boat for a buck. They don't do chores. Do they do homework? No, unless the homework is how to put a condom on a cucumber or how to learn how racist white people are or to learn that marijuana is healthy for you and tobacco. I mean, tobacco is bad for you. Marijuana is healthy for you. So is there no time of day? When I raised my children, if we went into a restaurant and the kids started to make any kind of noise, I immediately picked them up. And I went out of the restaurant, talked to them. I said, look, there were other people. And even if they didn't understand me, I said to them, you can't make noise in the restaurant. There are other people eating, and they want to have a nice dinner. So please, if we go back, you can't make noise. You can't make one of your famous cocktails out of the salt and the pepper and the ketchup and the mustard and the soy sauce and mix it and pass it around. No, you can't make that famous cocktail that you two like to pass around with each other because I'm liable to puke on the table. That's in the Chinese restaurants. They used to make a cocktail. Do you have any idea that that's the reason the ancient Sumerians stumbled upon beer? It was because of times like this. When you have a situation like we have today, that's why the ancient Sumerians stumbled upon beer. You know how the story goes, don't you? Well, I may as well tell it. It's as interesting as any. Having studied this for years, all of this stuff. Our theories, no one knows. I mean, the ancient Sumerians look like my uncles to me. I mean, I see the pictures, renderings of them. I guess I descend from Sumerians because they all look like my relatives. But the way the story goes is somebody ate some grain, some type of wheat dish or whatever in the area there, the Mediterranean basin. And they spat it out. I know it's disgusting. They didn't eat it all. I was like, ugh, this is disgusting. Again, another night of grain? I'm sick of grain. I don't care how healthy they are. I don't want it. I'm a pew. Bah! And they spit in the plate. But they were starving. Days later, they went back, and there was nothing to eat but the grain that they half-masticated and discarded in the plate. And the guy ate it. Ugh, disgusting. I ate this guy. And guess what? His wife didn't look like she had a mustache for the first time in 25 years. His ugly little children looked like he could deal with them without wanting to throw them out of the cave door. In other words, he got drunk. Why? Because the half-masticated grain matter that he spat up fermented in the cave during that period that it was sitting there, and it was produced some alcohol. And that's apparently one of the theories as to how alcoholic beverages, better known as adult beverages, developed in history. Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, I'm glad I could share this moment with you. Another moment in Savage history on the Savage Nation. It's actually probably, according to what I've read, true. And by the way, guess which culture? You're not going to believe this one. This is a real, you're talking about historical ironies. Take a guess which ancient peoples first developed wine from the grape. Buzz, answer. The same country that's now dominated by the invader from Turkey, Iran. In other words, the ancient Persians, allegedly, or it is thought historically, were the first viticulturalists on the planet. Well, take a look now. You got an invader from Turkey named Ahmadinejad, who apparently, according to Iranians, is not even of Iranian descent.
Savage.